Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. I am joined by my two good friends, the one and only Grant Bills. You can find him on Twitter, of course, at Wisco Grant. You can find him on the Wisco Sports Show, and he likes to produce for Bill Michaels as well. So he also does that. And then Perry Goldstein, you can find her on Twitter at Perry underscore Goldstein. Also one of my good friends. You can find her, of course, on Packs What She Said with Maggie Loney, the great tag team of the 21st century. Perry, Grant, disappointing performance from the Green Bay Packers, to say the least. In as a general rule of thumb, going down 28-0, not great, not great. But they did fight back. It was an interesting game. Some positives we can take away. Certainly plenty of negatives. But before we get there, how are you guys doing?
You know, roller coaster of a day watching football, to be honest with you. Not my ideal. Not my favorite game I've ever watched. I will say that. Not my favorite game,
but doing significantly better. That punt that he tried to Amari Rodgers over his head that turned into a touchdown, that gave me a lot of enjoyment, actually, and then some fun plays in the second half. So it could have been a lot worse. Like, they could have benched Jordan Love down 25 points, and then it could have been Malik Willis, and that would have been a lot more depressing. So not a great game by any means, but could have been a lot worse. So there, yeah.
It can always be worse. There is always that. It's a very interesting game. Like, no matter what way you want to spin it, whether positive, negative, anything in between, going down 28-0 is a brutal way to start any game. And it was in all phases. The offense sputtered out on multiple occasions and had turnovers early. Then you had Narveson missing field goals. The defense just not being able to stop the Vikings at all, dropped interception opportunities. It was just everything. I mean, literally, I mean, if you're going to be down 28-0 early in a game, everything kind of has to go wrong. And to the point where, like, if Green Bay finishes one of those drives with a touchdown, right? All right, maybe you can get back from 28-7. If the defense can hold to a couple field goals, all right, maybe you can hold them to, you know, 20-0. Maybe you can come back from that, or 17-0 or whatever it might be. If the special teams can actually make the field goals, maybe 28-6 or 28-14, if you can get there, is more comebackable. But, like, for everything to go wrong the way that it did, to be down 28 was brutal. And then you finally catch a break. As you mentioned, you get the punt over the head. Daniel Whelan, unbelievable. We'll talk about him a little bit, but he crushes a punt. Dude tries to catch it over his head. You get the ball at the 3-yard line. Then you have the chaos that ensued with the penalty and everything like that from Matt LaFleur. But you get a gorgeous ball to Jaden Reed for a touchdown. You get a little bit of momentum. You're thinking, all right, they get the ball back in the second half. And then they go 3-and-out in the second half. But they still didn't quit. Came all the way back to 28-22 with 10 minutes left. And all the momentum on their side. Minnesota was not doing anything in the second half. You still have to give Green Bay credit for fighting back that much. And then Minnesota goes right down. And you get a big completion to Justin Jefferson over the middle of the field. Devontae Wyatt gets hurt on the play, and it feels like all that momentum you just worked 22 points towards was, like, sucked out of you. Minnesota gets a field goal. You're down by 9, but Green Bay gets the ball back. They're being able to move the ball pretty well. And then you get drives that eventually end in interception from Love, fumble from Tucker Kraft. You do get a final touchdown drive at the end, at the very end, but no onside kick recovery, which is what you would have needed in that scenario. And ultimately, the Vikings come away with a win. A bizarre, wild, weird game that never quite felt like Green Bay sort of deserved to win. And I know deserve doesn't really have anything to do with it, but let's go with whatever direction you want to go in, your gut takeaways from this game. But Perry, I'll start with you. I know we kind of went over how you're feeling, but what was your takeaway from this one?
During or after the game?
You can go in any direction you want, my friend.
Because I felt very differently, like, I feel very differently now, a few hours removed, than I did during the game. During the game, I was very frustrated because it felt like it was so, I still feel this way, less frustration, but it was just so winnable. Like, all the mistakes that they made, the turnovers, whether it was by Tucker Kraft, like, not protecting the football, or by Jordan Love making silly mistakes, the penalties, which they've been doing so far over the course of this first month. So many of these things they're just inflicting on themselves. And you said it, Andy, they came back. Let's say all those things, they go out, go down 28 to nothing. And it's simply because the Vikings played a perfect first half, right? The Packers did everything they possibly could and it didn't matter. And they go down 28 to nothing. They still come back 28-22. They still are in this game and they cannot get out of their own way. Like, they were still in it till the very end, which you have to give them so much credit for, which is a huge testament to like who they are as a group. Because you can't say that about past teams, right? Past teams would have just like let themselves spiral out of control. This was so winnable, and yet they just let themselves continuously get shot in the foot and shot in the foot. And it's really hard to watch, especially a division round matchup, especially an NFC matchup that you know could potentially, we're going to look back on this game and be like, is this the one? If they had won it, would they win the division? Would they have different seeding in the playoffs? Like, this could just be the game that ends up biting them later on. It was just really, really frustrating to watch in the moment. A few hours removed, while all that still stands, like, I'm not panicked by this team at all or by this loss. Again, like I said, they fought back. They still could have won. I think all the things that they did are cleanupable. I think some of it is due to Jordan Love being rusty from not playing the last 2 weeks. This offense looks like it's just right there to being an absolute juggernaut again. They just can't keep doing this. If they are playing these kinds of games in week 8, in week 12, in week 16, we're having a huge, huge problem, like a huge problem.
Yeah.
But they clean this up and they're going to be on fire. Like they're going to be great. I'm sure we'll talk about the pass rush at some point, and that's something that I am like legitimately starting to worry about, but overall gut reaction, not panicked, clean it up. I think they're going to be okay, but frustrating. They could have won this game.
Grant?
Well, they had over, you know, parts of offense, like they moved the ball and like they had all these opportunities. So frustrating. Yes, Barry, when they were down 28 to nothing or when it was happening, when that, you know, the Vikings were taking that lead, I got really frustrated because I felt like I was on a different wavelength from everyone else on Twitter and in my group chats, where everyone is like, Love looks, you know, awful. He shouldn't be out there. Why did they bring him back? You know, they should put Willis in. And like, Love didn't look great, but I was more concerned with everything else. It's like, okay, well, Love is playing his second game in, you know, whatever, a span of how many months. Like, this is basically week one for him again. Not surprising at all that he looks a little rusty, but people were talking online and in the group chats and everything that I'm in about, like, you would think that his leg was dragging behind him by loose skin. It's like, no, he looks like he's figuring out what he can do and can't do physically, but I'm more concerned about the pass rush and the kicker and the wide receivers not making plays. Like, Jordan Love looking rusty was the least of all my concerns. And the way that people, again, we're talking about it online, maybe that doesn't matter. It was like, everything is great, but Jordan Love is melting down. And that's just not how I saw it. Once they fell behind 28 to nothing, I mentally kind of booked this as a loss. I said, okay, so that sucks because I hate the Vikings and I've grown up most of my life state. I hate the idea of losing to the Vikings, especially at Lambeau. So from that point on, 28 to nothing or whatever, bottom of the game, I thought, okay, if they can just put together some good drives as we kind of mosey through garbage time and get some momentum and feel like, okay, Jordan Love kind of shook some rust off, built some chemistry back after missing a couple games with receivers. Okay, well, then we go into next week, very winnable game against the Rams, who lost to the Bears today. And we feel like Jordan Love is, all right, trending in the right direction. And they're 2-2 after missing their starter for a couple weeks. And I'd say that's exactly what happened over the course of the game. The problem is it happened to such a degree that now I'm mad that they didn't win. Now I'm mad that they didn't win. I'm like, well, man, if they only, you know, so you can talk yourself into circles with games like this. But I thought once they fell behind 28 to nothing, the rest of the game was, injuries aside, probably as close to the best case scenario as you could ask for now going into next week against the Rams.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I want to talk more about Love in just a moment and the whole conversation as to whether or not he should have played or shouldn't have played and everything like that. So we'll get to that. I want to put a pin in it. Also want to put a pin in the pass rush as well, because I think that is definitely worth discussing. Just my overall gut reaction, a little bit of kind of what both of you guys are saying, but Perry specifically, no panic here at all. This is a very good football team. Have not played well through 4 weeks, and particularly against the Eagles and against the Vikings. Thought they really beat themselves in both of these games. Minnesota deserves credit. They were the better team in this game. They deserve to win the game. I have no issue with them winning the game. It wasn't like anything got stolen from them or anything like that, but it's just too many turnovers, too many mistakes, too many drop passes, too many missed throws, too many field goals off the uprights, too many plays that were there to be made, you know, fourth down throws in the end zone that you can go up and get out of the air and just don't come down with. And those are the things that I think are, to your point, Perry, going to be really frustrating when you look back at this one and say they were in positions to be successful. Isaiah McDuffie dropping interceptions in a 3rd and 14 to get off the field on the first drive. And just not enough of those plays were made when they were there to be made. I would argue it's sort of been the story of the first month of the season. And they definitely did everything right enough to win against Indianapolis and against Tennessee, especially with a backup quarterback. They deserve credit for both of those things, even if those are maybe not the best teams in the world. Still two very impressive victories with backup quarterback in both of them, specifically with one of them being on the road. But there's been a ton of mistakes and a ton of missed opportunities through 4 weeks so far. I think a large part of this that we, you know, maybe sometimes, I don't think we forget, I think everyone's well aware of it, but like, this is the youngest team in the NFL. And yeah, they over exceeded maybe some of the expectations that people had for them a year ago, but it is still a team that is growing and in need of sometimes some reminders of, hey, it takes a lot to win week out and week in the NFL. And if you have a game like this at any moment where you don't have, you know, even your B game, much less your A game, this can happen to you. And Matt LaFleur mentioned in his postgame presser, you can get humbled very quickly in the NFL. I love the fact that they never quit in this one and that they got this to a 6-point game with 10 minutes left, went on a 22-point run in the, you know, in this game and gave themselves an opportunity. They didn't convert on it. And you don't get, you know, moral victories for going down 28-0 and then being like, well, we got it close. Like, you don't go down 28-0. That can't happen. That's not good enough. That should not happen to a team that has this much talent. What I love about this team is that they generally, in these situations, learn their lessons. I thought we saw it last year a lot. I thought we saw it even in after the second week of preseason where they got their butts kicked in joint practices and got crushed in the second preseason game. They came back in week 3, beat the Ravens in joint practices, and then destroyed them in the game. Thought after week 1 in Philly, they came out and really kind of kicked ass in that Colts game. Like, this is a team that, yeah, they're going to need maybe a reminder every now and again, but they don't let it sort of fester and get to them. I think there are positives to take away there, but just too many mistakes, too many errors, too many self-inflicted wounds. And after a month, I think that's a takeaway. And I think those are things that I've just really got to get tightened up and cleaned up over the remainder of the season if they want to be the team that I think everyone kind of expects that they can be. And I still think will be for the remainder of the season.
It's a really long season, right? Like, I think we forget, we feel like it's going fast, but we forget how long it is and how quickly a team can turn a season around. So if this is the worst that they look all season, I think they're in really good shape too, right? You hope that they just build on it. And if last season is any indication of the trajectory in which they go, this is the worst that they're going to look. And they're only going to get better. You're not going to win a game when you turn the ball over 4 times. Like, you're just not, unless the other team turns the ball over more than 4, which they didn't. So you just have to play a cleaner game of football, and history indicates that they typically do. It's weird that, I don't know, that Jordan Love wore his Favre jersey and then played like Favre. You know, it's just, it's not going to happen again. At least we hope.
It's so interesting. You mentioned it's a long season, and they're going to have to kind of get better kind of as that season goes along. We'll talk about Jordan, of course, 32 of 54 in this one, 389 yards, 4 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, a bizarre game for Jordan. Grant, you brought it up earlier of like, hey, you know, should he have played? Like, the conversation online was like, did they bring him back too soon? Did he not look like himself because of the injury? I agree with you 1,000,000%, Grant. I thought this was a lot more due to rust than due to, oh my goodness, they're RG3 in this guy. Can you believe he's back out there? Anything like that. Like, not even remotely close. And this was a situation for me that I think if they would have kept him out this week and played him next week against Rams, I think he would have had to work this rust off next week against the Rams. I'm kind of happy that he got this rust out of his system in this game. And now hopefully he's going to be better against the Rams and is going to get a little bit more of a rhythm. To me, this is a quarterback who played sort of a bizarro game and not his best game in Philly in week one, and then had back-to-back games where he missed, and then was trying to figure out how to get back into a rhythm with this offense in week four. And that's what you saw. And as the game went along, I know there were still some mistakes in the second half, but I felt like he gotten a little bit more of a rhythm and was finding his receivers a little bit more. So I'm good with him playing. I thought it was the right move. He said he was good after the game. Didn't seem like there was any re-injury or any sort of major risk or anything like that. He looked mobile enough. His arm looked good enough. He made some big time throws down the field. It just was rusty. And that's kind of where I come out on it.
And I think the fan reaction to the way that Love looked early on, which I disagree with, look, you can feel however you want as a fan, it's your choice. But I think it's a product of how his injury was discussed going back weeks. And I lost my mind, you know, relatively on my show last week at a clip of Diana Russini and Chase Daniel talking about the Packers' decision to bring back Jordan Love or to not bring him back. And they're like, this is way too soon. And you saw him on the field in Brazil and they paid him all this money. It's like, all right. I thought everyone missed the point with bringing Jordan Love back. It's like they will bring him back when he's healthy. When the doctors say he's ready to come back, he will come back. And that will be separate of schedule or of record or how Malik Willis looks. Like everyone talked about Jordan Love's return like it was based off of vibes. It's like, no, when he's healthy, bring him back. So when he started today, that to me signals the Packers cleared him. He's healthy and he's good. So even when they fall behind by four touchdowns, let him play through it. Quarterback, this is an NFL game they're trying to win, right? Like I almost would have been frustrated if they pulled him in the second quarter. Now, if it stayed a 3 or 4 score game, okay, maybe he doesn't need to play the fourth quarter. Sure. But like he's back now. And the fact that the Packers brought him back means he's healthy. He's ready to go. And we're not going to do this in and out, you know, back and forth thing at quarterback. So I don't know. That's just frustrating to me because sometimes we talk about injuries like, well, they should bring him back this game because this will be an easy opponent. And it'll be like, bring him back when they're healthy, when they're cleared. If that's sooner or later, it's just, whenever they're healthy, bring him back. And I assume that's how the Packers handled this. So I was fine with him being out there today. And I just saw a lot of Packers fans who weren't.
Perry?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And I agree with what Grant said before about it being rust. Like, it was just clear, too, that like in the first half, he was a little hesitant about stepping into his throws. And then towards in the second half, you know, he obviously got more comfortable. Like he scrambled, for God's sakes. Like he's obviously fine. If he feels like he can scramble in the game, he took some hits. He was a little off with his receivers. He hasn't been playing with them. Nothing about this game, like screamed, he came back too early or he's not healthy. And nothing about the way the Packers handle injuries either, to Grant's point, like indicates to me that they would ever toy with the health of their most important player. It's week four. So, and I agree with you, Andy, that if, you know, yeah, I just agree across the board. So if this is the game where he needed to shake off the rust, this is a game he needed to shake off the rust. He probably would look like this next week too. If it wasn't for this. So they did it. And I'm sure we will just see a steady increase in his abilities. He still threw for almost 400 yards. Like, I think we'd feel a lot differently about this game if not for the interceptions. He had some uncharacteristic decisions. He was seeing the field a little bit differently than normal, but he also played like a very good defense, maybe the best defense in the league right now that Brian Flores is calling. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes the next few weeks.
So how do we then evaluate this performance from Jordan, knowing that he's not 100%. He's working off some rust. Made some, like you mentioned, Perry, some uncharacteristic mistakes in this game. 4 touchdowns, 389 yards. Very good. 32 out of 54. Some very poor decisions from time to time. Clearly the one down to Wicks that he just threw up for grabs. Very Favre-esque on that play. And again, uncharacteristic of him. And then extremely inaccurate at times to time, from time to time, even within completions, you know, even where guys would have to kind of reach back on a play, or, you know, maybe he gave the receiver an opportunity, but it wasn't the inaccurate throw. Guys had to go down for the ball a lot. He was under throwing them. How do we evaluate this by saying, all right, we know that there are circumstances here, not 100% working off rust, but also not a great game from Jordan, even though we can also very clearly see there were some really impressive moments from Jordan in this one. Hey friends, I know week four didn't go Green Bay's way, but we are on to week five, and that means another chance for a victory, and of course, another chance for some wins on Prize Picks. Did you know that you can win 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as few as 4 correct picks? Listen, Prize Picks is the best way to get in on the action, and what I love is that they always put their members first. That includes fast, safe, and secure withdrawals, and when my picks hit, I can get my money in as little as 15 minutes. So this week, I'm definitely going to get in on some WNBA playoff action, that goes without saying, but I also want to go with Romeo Doubs in week 5 in LA. Romeo is due for a big game and some big-time red zone production. He tore it up in training camp with his red zone ability. He is due, and I think he is going to get those touchdowns this week in LA. Whoever you decide to choose, just remember, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. Prize Picks, run your game. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game, and that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are 2 tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, 2 tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, Game Time has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, PACKADAY, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
I don't know if I like evaluate it just like in a vacuum. Like, I feel like I probably look back on this game in a couple of weeks, depending on how he plays over the next few weeks. Because again, like, he's been hurt and he hasn't played. Like Grant said, it's basically week 1 for him. So if he looks like this over the course of the next 6 weeks, then we can have a discussion around like, why is he playing like this? But if this is an individual game and then we have Jordan Love that we know for the next 6 weeks, then we chalk this up to this is what he looked like coming back off of an injury. But I'm not evaluating this game individually right now.
I think that's fair.
I think it's important to remember too, like the type of player that Jordan Love is. He wasn't known, and I don't think at any point in his career he's going to be known for pinpoint laser accuracy, right? Like, there is some variance with his ball placement. He can make unbelievable throws look really easy, and then sometimes he can make easier throws look really difficult. And that's the player he is. So we need to operate kind of with that baseline. Now, he needs to be tighter than he was today. A lot of balls down low. There were a couple balls too where it's like, yeah, it's a little low or it's a little behind you, but those are plays that you need to make. There was 2 very different forms of the Packers offense that we saw today. And you could almost go drive by drive labeling them. There was the drives where it looked a lot like the first half of the season last year, where it's like those throws from Love are bad and the receiver should probably make the catch, but they're not, right? Whether it's a little misplaced or whether the corner just got an arm in there and made really good plays. We saw that a lot, I think, in the Saints game last year, where Jordan Love was making good throws. It's the receivers were getting beat by physical corners to the spot. And then there were other drives where it's like they were connected telepathically and it just looked so easy. And Love looked like he was having fun and every receiver that he threw to was in the perfect spot. And they just kind of oscillated back and forth. And I don't know how Jordan Love taps into more of what we saw at the end of last year. I think part of it's probably just chemistry with his wide receivers, honestly, because last year as games together, it just seemed to trend that way. And it looked a lot more like we saw in the good drives today. rather than the bad. So I don't know how to evaluate it. I think I'm with Perry. This is a jumping off point. We just don't know where he's jumping to yet. And we need to see the next couple of weeks to really put today into perspective, I think.
Yeah, I'm not concerned. We saw what Jordan Love was last year. That's who he's going to be. I have no real concern about that whatsoever. And he's going to be just fine. You know, rough game coming back from injury. I think it's just rhythm. And, you know, I think we saw him even in this game find rhythm at times. But like you said, it was hit or miss on a drive-by-drive basis. I would have really liked to have seen his wide receivers, even in some tough situations and positions where, yeah, you know what? You got to go up and win a 50-50 ball. Or you know what? The ball is going to be around your ankles. Or you know what? The ball is going to be a couple of feet behind you and you got to reach back for it or whatever. Come up with it. Find a way to come up with it. Like that sometimes it's not going to be perfect. And sometimes a player on your team, whether it's for a quarterback or a different position, whatever it might be, is going to make a mistake, but a teammate will have the ability to bail him out and make him look good, even in a situation where it doesn't maybe deserve to look that good or doesn't maybe deserve to be bailed out. But you as a teammate can go and bail him out. And I thought the wide receivers in this one, not put in great positions. And Jordan owned that in the post-game presser, said, hey, I didn't put my guys in great positions, specifically when I asked him about Dontayvion Wicks. But those guys had opportunities to make some plays and couldn't in a lot of different situations. And I think that's what you also would have liked to have seen is like, yeah, Jordan didn't have his A or B game in this one. He just didn't. Probably wasn't going to. And you probably kind of knew that going in. I thought the entire team did a great job of rallying around Malik Willis in week two and week three and really playing great football around him. I didn't necessarily see the team playing great football around Jordan, even if Jordan was a little bit off in this one. I would have liked to have seen that be a little bit better. And it will be. Again, the rhythm is a huge part of this offense, and you have to have reps and you have to have consistency. When you don't have that, you're going to see inconsistency, and I think that's what we saw in a huge part of this one. Let's talk about the defense. Were you going to say something, Grant?
I was just going to say, I'm not convinced, by the way, that Wicks didn't catch both of those balls. Like, I'm a Packer fan. I kind of thought he caught both of those, and I also feel like Xavier McKinney definitely didn't catch that interception. Like some of the reviews, they're obviously very close and I'm a Packers fan, but it's like, I think he scooped both of those balls off the turf, to be fair to him. But I liked hearing Love, by the way, after the game saying, yeah, I made it difficult on him, because he did. But I also think at times wide receivers need to catch those difficult balls. So yeah, I agree.
The crazy thing with the Wicks one too, is if either of those are not overturned, then he doesn't have a challenge to challenge the Jefferson one later in the game that got overturned into a completion, which would have been Packers ball earlier. And who knows what happens from there, but like just some crazy shatter points in this one that maybe could have gone in a variety of different directions. And yes, the referees were their own degree of frustrating in this game for both sides. Like you said, the McKinney one, iffy, the couple Wicks ones, iffy, the Matt LaFleur timeout thing was massively wonky, like just a bizarre game all the way around, including the officials in this one. Let's talk about that defensive performance, because kind of the same things we can say about the offense and even the special teams, because while there were missed field goals, you also had Daniel Whalen responsible for basically a touchdown almost in and of himself. The just inconsistencies on all sides, and that certainly was a huge piece of the defensive performance as well. Xavier McKinney comes up with an interception, which is great. You know, they're able to get some the Keyshawn Nixon strip sack, which was a great blitz call by Jeff Hafley and company on that one. But some really inconsistent pressure or non-existent pressure for a good portion of it, unless they actually brought extra guys. And not great coverage on a few different occasions, allowing guys to run free through the secondary. And then, of course, Ballantyne getting toasted by Addison on that one play on the touchdown on the first drive. Frustrating from the defense for a good portion of it. Grant, I'll start with you this time.
I get it in the secondary a little bit. You're going to give up big plays to Jefferson and to Addison, because those guys are really good, and the Packers didn't have their number one and number two corners. So that's going to happen to a degree. I was disappointed with the pass rush. I think everybody was. I just had a high hope that Kenny was going to bust out and that Devontae Wyatt was going to make some plays. And some of those interior linemen, because while the Vikings have good tackles, I think you could really get them up the middle. And then when you create that pressure up the middle, you put those excellent tackles in a bad position, and that opens it up for and just none of that really came to fruition. And that genuinely bummed me out, because I was excited to think that, especially Kenny Clark, but also Wyatt, who I really hope is okay, because he's really coming along nicely in year three now. There's something left to be desired there. And also, like, Rashawn Gary, I'm just left wanting more a lot with Rashawn Gary, even against good tackles. Cause you know what? Like, contending teams are going to have good tackles, you know, like that's something that you're going to have to play through and still make an occasional play here and there. And it just, just hasn't been the case. So I was disappointed with the front. I think you take what you get on the back end without your first and second corner in a matchup like this.
Perry?
I mean, again, also without your best cornerbacks in this game, you extra need a good pass rush because like they are the additional band-aid to not having like your good coverage, right? So you in a spot where you needed them already, even if Valentine and Jair are playing, you additionally don't have them like on top of that. It just like, and I feel like it really spiraled, and it's like, I don't want to blame the defense for going like for the Packers going down 28-0, but it really spiraled really quickly when you can't get to Sam Darnold and he's operating out of a clean pocket, and you're also not being able to cover any of their pass catchers. And they just were able to run. They were able to throw. They were able to do literally everything that they wanted to do against this Packers defense, like very early and very often and very quickly. And it just became a blowout quite quickly with no answers. And yes, the playmakers, AKA Xavier McKinney, came up with plays eventually, but it was just too late at that point. And, you know, they turned that Xavier McKinney interception into a 3-and-out. And yes, they had the strip sack, but again, it was too late. And the only time they could bring pressure was on blitzes. And quite frankly, like, that's not good enough. Like, you have to be able to get home when you rush four. So, cause we all know, you know, you can't just like bring an extra man every time and get a sack, because you're not always going to get that sack. And then you're left, you know, without that extra coverage in the back. And that's how you create explosive plays, especially against a team who already creates explosive plays with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison without bringing an extra guy. Like, they create explosive plays all over the place with Aaron Jones too. So it just like really spiraled out of control. And I don't know if this was a scheme thing. I don't know if this is a scheme thing, the pass rush issue, or if this is a personnel issue. Like, are they adjusting to the new scheme and just not quite there? Or is this, they just don't have the explosive pass rushers right now? That's kind of like the question that I'm asking. And I don't know if we'll have the answer. This is just me wondering this aloud as I will watch over the course of the next few weeks. Like, we don't have that answer right now. That is my question.
I think we are going to have to keep a much closer eye on that. So first thing, one of the things you mentioned is, you know, it's not all on the defense for getting down 28-0, which it's not. But I will say, first three defensive drives for, or the Vikings offensive drives, if you will, 6 plays, 73 yards, touchdown, 8 plays, 73 yards, touchdown, 7 plays, 46 yards, touchdown. Again, you can't allow, and I know the 46 yard one was a little bit on a shorter field or whatever, you're getting it in plus territory. You still can't go 73, 73, 46 and end the first three drives with touchdowns. That is a brutal performance by the defense, especially on the first drive when Sam Darnold throws Isaiah McDuffie a ball right to him, and you got to be able to pick that off and make a difference there. As far as the pass rush goes, listen, I know sacks are not the be-all end-all. It's not everything. Pressures matter too. Rashawn Gary is, I think, wanting to be thought of and is getting paid like a top-tier pass rusher in the NFL. A top-tier pass rusher in the NFL, if they go 11 quarters without getting a sack, or with maybe just one sack, it's like, that was kind of a slow period. Rashawn has one sack in his last 11 games. Like, and I know last year, part of the second half of the year was coming back from the ACL and it looked like he ran out of gas. I understand he got one in the Philly game. I understand he would have had another one last week had it not been for the Preston offsides, and pressures matter as well. The pressure he had last week led to an LVN sack. I understand all of that. But 11 games, one sack is still not good enough in any real capacity for somebody that should be, and I think is thought of, especially in Green Bay, as a pass rusher who is somebody that needs to make a ton of impact on this team. So that has to be better to me. I get that he's gone against some good offensive tackles, Lane Johnson and Mailata in week one. Colts have good offensive tackles, Braden Smith specifically. And then this week, again, Darisaw, O'Neal, they've faced some good tackles so far. The best pass rushers still have to win against good tackles. And then this game, I don't think you saw anything from the edges. I'm looking forward to going back and watching it on the All 22. And I hope that I can go through my grades this week and be like, you know what? I was wrong. Rashawn Gary was actually really good in this game or whatever. I don't think that's going to be the case, but I will gladly be wrong if that is the case. But the edges made no impact in this one. And then where you really thought there was an advantage in this one, like you were mentioning earlier, Grant, Blake Brandel, Garrett Bradbury, Ed Ingram, like those are players that you can win against. Green Bay just didn't. And that, if we're talking about, and you brought it up perfectly before, Perry, of like, what are we sort of actually concerned about in this game from like a, maybe not just short term, but like, all right, there's some concerns here, especially with a potential wide injury. The lack of pass rush with a 4-man rush is one that I have some concerns over right now, legitimate concerns over right now.
I get, and I'll be quick because Perry, I want you to add on to the point that you made. I get sacks are everything, like pressures matter too. And that's something, those are conversations that I've had with my listeners for years about Rashawn Gary, because it comes up a lot in my show.
Yep.
It's like, I get it. There are more numbers than sacks. Like, I am woke. I understand that. But like, also when a guy's getting paid that much, like I should just be able to see it on TV too. You know what I mean? Like you can pull up stats for pressures and for hurry, but like, also it's just, we watch the games. There's not enough there. There's not enough chaos. There's not enough, you know, negative plays. He's not affecting plays enough. Slightly tongue in cheek, but like actually significant to me. Maybe other Packers fans will agree. Rashawn Gary, the biggest play of his season so far was that tackle of Aaron Jones on third and short, because it prevented that drive from going further, and it prevented Aaron Jones from probably getting a touchdown, which would have been the kick and the sack. A catastrophe. So like, I say that a little tongue in cheek, that was a significant play, but in my point of view, like just for how I felt about this game, and I think other Packers fans probably agree, like I am thankful to Rashawn Gary for making that play, because I did not need that game to be capped off with an Aaron Jones Lambeau leap.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a ton to add. It's just more that like, it's, you know, you brought back Preston Smith, you're paying Rashawn Gary, you have Kenny Clark. And, you know, now Devontae Wyatt, we don't know how long he's going to be out. He was in a boot, right? Leaving the locker room with crutches, not a great sign. He leads the team in sacks right now. I guess they rotate in TJ Slayton. I don't know what they do in his absence, but LVN, I personally, I don't know. This is just the eye test, Andy. I'd love your grades specifically. Like, I think LVN has started over the course of the first four games, like slowly started to flash more and more. In this specific scheme. Like, I just think Halfley is like starting to unlock him a little more. I just see 90 in and around where he's supposed to be more. That's just like off the eye test, but it's not producing anything, right? Because even when the 4-man rush does get home, right, in this game specifically, Darnold was able to scramble out and then pick up a first down, right? So there's no like edge integrity. The only guys that got sacks in this game were Keyshawn Nixon and Quay Walker. It's just, it's not like, you just need to be able to collapse the pocket a little bit better with the guy. And we know that these specific players can do it. We've seen it in the past. It's not like they're new. They didn't trade for them. You know, they're not new draft picks besides LVN. So that's why I'm like, are they adjusting to a new scheme? Is Halfley still figuring out what to do? I hope that's the case, because otherwise we have a personnel issue, and that's much harder to fix.
Yeah, the Wyatt injury is massively concerning. I do think LVN had a good first 3 weeks. I didn't see much of it. I was watching from the press box, so I can't speak to it too closely from an LVN standpoint today. But over the first 3 weeks, he read in the positive every week. So I think there's something there. But again, what Matt talked about last week and what we saw against the Titans is you have to have a cohesive pass rush all on the same page, all working together. And we saw it last year. There were times where like one guy would get home and then that guy would like quarterbacks are really good at just sidestepping one dude right now, like in the NFL. Like almost every quarterback has the mobility to sidestep. If you can't sidestep one dude, you're just a sitting duck at quarterback. You're not going to be a good quarterback. I mean, that just is the way it is. And almost every one of these guys has the ability to sidestep a guy and move up into the pocket and then go to where that guy just vacated. So you have to have guys coming from multiple angles if you really want a disruptive pass rush, or somebody's just going to step up and then find their way. And Darnold did that a couple times in this game and actually scrambled for yardage when needed to. So it takes everyone working together. We didn't see that in this game. Just not enough guys were winning consistently enough. And those are the things that are going to happen when you don't win up front. And when you have a banged up secondary and a linebacking core that's not exactly known for their coverage abilities, yeah, if you don't win up front, it's going to be a long day. And this was a long day. I did think, you know, we talked about it, right? Like they went touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. Well, the rest of the day, 3 plays, 2 yards punt, 1 play, 4 yard touchdown. That's on the offense. That's not on the defense. 3 plays, 9 yards punt. Then the end of the half, 7 plays, 62 yards interception, 4 plays, 12 yards punt, 3 plays, 9 yards punt, 2 plays, 6 yards fumble, -6 yards fumble, 7 plays, 55 yards field goal, 3 plays, 4 yards punt, 8 plays, 38 yards turnover on downs, and then kneel downs at the end. Like after the first three drives, which is still, you gave up 21 points on the first three drives. I'm not excusing it, but the defense did pretty much clamp down outside. Again, they gave up the 1 play, 4 yard touchdown. That, again, it's not on them. And then 1 field goal the rest of the day. And that was it. And got multiple turnovers as well during that time. So they did bounce back, but a lot of this game just sort of narrows down to too little too late.
I did say this on Pax, what she said, and I've been thinking about it like since we recorded, since if you're watching this, it's, we recorded earlier than we recorded this episode. In content world timelines, I do feel like if where scoring had happened differently, we might be talking about this game differently, right? Because the final score being what it was, it's not actually that scary. Right. And the 3 touchdown drives, to your point, Andy, and the way that you just like laid out what the defense did, like if you just told me, if I hadn't watched the game and you're like, this is what the defense did over the course of the day, I'd be like, all right, I don't love that they gave out, you know, those 3 big touchdown drives, but they did do some good things. But yeah, it's so, football is so situational, and you're reacting to the situation at hand. And when your offense is clearly struggling and down and you need to make a stop and you're already down 14-0 and you give up another long touchdown drive, like that's where I get so frustrated with this defense, because it's not really, yes, they did all those other great things, but those great things happened at the wrong time, right? You can, if you mix, right? Do you understand what I'm saying? Like if you mixed and matched, and it's the same goes with the offense. If you mixed and matched when all of these things happened, you're feeling very differently about this game, but that's not the way this goes. It's like you were already down and you're crawling out of a hole.
For anyone that wants the ultimate cope in this one, if anyone's needing an ultimate cope in this one, you don't have Jordan at 100%. Jordan throws 3 picks. You have 4 turnovers on the day. You play a team that's undefeated. You play C-minus football at best. And like you have 2 missed field goals. You have multiple weird play or like calls that go against you. And nothing really feels right in the game. And you lost by 2. Like, again, if you're looking for the ultimate cope, like this is a game where a lot of stuff went wrong. I mean, a lot of stuff went wrong. There are a butt ton of mistakes. And you played a really good football team and you lost by 2. That's the ultimate cope in this one. Like just a small smattering of maybe even some seemingly insignificant things go slightly different in this one, Green Bay probably just picks up the win, which is crazy to think about. And again, that is an ultimate cope. I'm not saying that. I'll go back to the fact Minnesota did like earn this win. Green Bay did not play well enough. This was their own loss at their own hands. So it's still, that's why it's frustrating. But to have all of that go wrong against a good team and only lose by 2, just imagine, again, same thing with Philly, right? Well, I listed the thing of like a billion things that went wrong in the Philly game and they barely lost that game. Can you just imagine? And they were all, of course, in this one without Jair Alexander as well, without Carrington Valentine, we can go on. But if you just have a game where this team actually plays without shooting themselves in the foot, look the hell out. Like there's not many teams that are going to hang with this team when this team is playing good ball, because it is hard to, it's hard to hang with this team when they're playing bad ball. Like it's still tough to put them away. So that's my ultimate spin slash cope on this one.
I would say that Matt LaFleur would maybe agree, because I watched his presser. He wasn't happy with losing. He seemed pretty healed. Like you were there, Andy. What kind of read were you getting on LaFleur? Because to me, and maybe this is what I wanted to hear and see, but I saw a coach that was like, okay, we got our starter back. Man, like we got a lot of things to clean up and a lot of things to attack. but the wheels are starting to spin in the right direction. And now we can kind of get our season back on track after missing our starter for a couple weeks. That's the read I got after after the Philly game, and Love was hurt. So it's understandable. Like, he was in at all. And the Love injury is probably part of that. He was also in South America, but I've seen Matt LaFleur crabby at the podium after losses. He was not, he seemed pretty fine after this game today. That's the read I got, at least.
Yeah, he's definitely disappointed. You could tell that. And I, to your point, I think he understands where this team is at. I think he understands kind of like what we talked about earlier. It's a young team that's still learning, and they are going to have to kind of go through some of these bumps in the road from time to time. I think he was very appreciative that this team kept fighting. And again, that's not a given. Like Perry mentioned earlier, might seem like it should be in the NFL, but it's not always a given. You're down 28-0. And even you get a little bit momentum in 28-7, and then you get the 3-and-out to immediately start the second half. And again, there were multiple times where this team could have just been like, it's not our day. And they literally fought till that last onside kick. I mean, like they literally kept fighting all throughout it. And again, you don't get any participation medals for that, but I do think that went a long way in at least easing his mood of like, this wasn't an effort issue. It was definitely an execution issue, definitely a mistake issue, definitely a self-inflicted issue, but it wasn't an effort issue. And usually that's where, if you're a coach, you're going to get a lot more pissed off and worried, as if the effort's not there. The effort's there. Now they just got to clean some stuff up. And again, knowing that you had everything go wrong basically, and you lost by two in a tough game, you can live with it and you can move on. And this is a game where if you're a coach, you can learn from this one. And there's a lot that you can get out of it to course correct. And I think there's probably a piece of Matt that understands, all right, I know what we need to fix. This is a workable thing. This is not one of those like, oh God, we have a lot of work to do. Like, there's just a few things that'll need to get cleaned up, and I think they can.
My ultimate hope is that if Braden Arvidsson just makes one of his two missed field goals, they win this game. That's my ultimate hope. Like, literally everything about this game stays the same. All the mistakes, everything. Not to put this on him, obviously, because like, it's not all on him, right? But he makes one, just one of the missed field goals, and they win. That's my hope.
Did you think he was going to make that second one as he was lining up? Honestly, from both of you, did you think he was making that second kick before the
at call? 37 yards?
Was the first one, though, right? 37 was the first, right? And where am I misremembering? 37 was the first. And then 49-yarder was the second one. I'm almost fine. Give me one thing. The first field goal was 37, no good. The second field goal was 49-yard, no good. So it was, first was 37, second was 49.
No, the 49-yard, I had zero faith in. But the 37, I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
I thought he was going to make both when he lined up to kick both. I really did. I didn't, because he misses one. So I thought for sure he'd make a 37-yarder. So I'm like, I didn't have any concern going into that. Then he doinked that one. And then the 49-yarder came up, and I'm like, well, he just misses one per game. Like, that's his MO. He only misses one per game. So he got that out of the way. So he'll make the 49-yarder. And then he clearly did not. So Braden Arvidsson, a problem right now. It's not good enough. And if you just missed the 49-yarder in this one, you're still concerned, because it's now, again, basically one per game. And it's not like a 59-yarder, right? Like, we're seeing guys hit 65-yarders in the NFL, like almost like one of these a week now, where you're seeing a 60-yarder be made. A 49-yarder is well within the realm of a normal NFL reason. But if that's the one that he missed and it's just the one, okay, still not great, but you can live with it. 37-yarder can't be missed. And I talked about this on the live post game. I don't care if that ball is tilted 1,000,000% the wrong way. I don't care if the laces are facing you. I don't care. You find a way to get a 37-yarder through the damn uprights. Like, and I don't care who you are. Like, if you told me that Daniel Whalen went out to kick that 37-yarder, I would expect Daniel Whalen to make the 37-yarder. If you told me that a random Packer went out there for a 37-yarder, I would say it's at least a coin flip's chance of going through. Like, you can't, as a professional kicker, you cannot miss a 37-yard field goal. And I don't care what any of the circumstances are. So that to me is a lot more nerve-wracking for Narvison moving forward. It certainly seems like they're going to stick with him. There are no great options out. There's no good options out there. There's not even an average option out there. Like, there's just bad options. And so if this is the least of the bad options, which I don't know if that's the case or not, that's clearly, it seems, what Green Bay thinks, so be it. But this is going to continue to cost you if this continues to happen through the rest of the season.
Do you think it's kicker or coaching or some combination? Because Greg Joseph is doing good. And also, like, Joey Sly hit a 60-yard bomb for the Patriots today, and Joey Sly is kind of to his team what Narveson is to the Packers, because they drafted a kicker last year who wasn't any good, got rid of him after the first year, after the rookie year, and replaced him with Joey Sly, which is what the Packers were trying to do, and they couldn't do it. So I don't know the intricacies of coaching a kicker special teams, but it just, do you have any questions about their process or the way that Rich Bisacci is running all that, Andy or Perry?
I have questions about all of it. Like, you had your basically draft pick kicker that it seemed like Bisacci kind of, that's who we wanted. And you had, this is your sixth kicker that you've had on the roster. And to your point, Greg Joseph, who has looked good so far when given the opportunity, we'll see if that continues or not. I also have questions about the process of Narveson. Not like this is not like hindsight is 2020 when the Packers were going to move on from kicker. I said there were two people that could potentially make sense. Braden Narveson was one of them. Austin Seibert was the other for the Jets, who had a really good preseason for the Jets. The Washington Commanders picked him up in week two. He made 7 of 7 field goals in week two. I think was a special teams player of the week in week two. And then he made all of his extra points and field goals in week three, made all of his extra points and field goals today. I think he's like something like 16 of 16 in the last 3 weeks on all of his kicks combined. So there was another kicker out there that was still there in week two, by the way, that Green Bay could have potentially had that. And they went with the younger, less experienced, less proven option. And Austin Seibert looked really good. And even the Jets were like, yeah, we would like to keep him, but we just, and by the way, that may have haunted them as well, because Greg Zuerlein missed a game winning field goal for the Jets today, but that's another story for another day. Probably no day, because this is not a Jets podcast, but you get my point. There were options out there. They missed it. They brought six kickers in this offseason. None of them have proven anything so far. And you've brought in the highest paid special teams coach, at least at one point, to be able to sort of figure this crap out. And there's been no figuring of crap out thus far. So I think it's all of it. I think it's GM, coach, special teams coach, actual kickers themselves, holder, long snapper, all of it. Just it's all like I'm the plague on all of their houses at this point.
Not I feel like through. this is your hill, Grant, that you just question Rich Bisacci. You're like, when is his seat going to be hot finally? Because like this, he was brought in to fix this and it's still not fixed.
I don't know. Like I'm not the world's biggest Rich Bisacci hater. I'm just like, I want to see some results. It's like, okay. So if like Waylon's been great. So if everything special teams goes back to Rich Bisacci, then he gets credit for that. Like the punting has been excellent, but I don't know. And by the way, Bisacci and Andy, you probably speak to this too. Like, I think he's probably very valuable in the locker room in other ways too. Like he's the assistant head coach. He's been around forever. Like he probably provides lots of value outside of special teams, which is great. I don't want to say I don't know what he does here. Cause that's, he obviously, you know, I think that's unfair, but I'm left wanting with the special teams quite a bit. Let's just say that I should feel better about being in the kicker wilderness to be like, man, we don't know who's going to be kicking, you know, in a month, but we have Rich Bisacci and I feel good about that. Cause he'll help make that as good as it can be. And I just don't feel that way at all.
It's hard, right? Because like kickoffs and kick returns are basically dead, right? Like Daniel Whalen's been amazing as a punter. They haven't really had many opportunities on punt returns. And so that it kind of only lead, and you're not really blocking field goals or extra points. Like that's not what happened. So your field goal and extra point defense is basically just did their kicker make it or not? So like the rest of special teams has been sort of mitigated, or like it hasn't, or like again, Whalen's been really good. So like the only thing that we can kind of point to is special teams right now. It's like, is the field goal / extra point. And they're not exactly giving Rich a ton to work with. Like this is to me a lot more on the kicker than it is on Rich. Rich can't go out and kick for the guy. I'm sure Rich knows what to do to like, be like, this is where you strike the ball. This is what you need to do. Like, I don't know. It just feels like they have a bad kicker. They've had a string of bad kickers. And this is like the world where you live in the NFL. It's like quarterbacks. If you don't have one, you're screwed. You can't just go out and find one. Like you can't just go out and like be like, hey, anyone want to give us a really good starting quarterback? Or anyone like, let's try to find one on the free agent market. It's the same thing with kickers. Like nobody's going to trade you a good kicker. And you can't just find them on the open market unless you can get Austin Seibert in week two, in which case you could. But yeah, it is what it is.
Right, really I had a caller, by the way, to my show really quickly, like 3 weeks ago, call in and say, this fan base doesn't know how to deal with bad kickers. We always talk about our quarterback privilege, but for younger people, it's like, we had Crosby, we had Longwell, we had Jackie. Like this isn't something we've had to go through a lot. And we know that with quarterbacks, like we're privileged as heck with quarterbacks. We got some kicker privilege too. Not that like a less privileged fan base would be like, oh, Narveson's doing great, missing a kick every game, but just something to consider. I hadn't really thought about that until someone else pointed it out.
Really quick. There was some good news in this game as well. Don't want to all be negative. Jaden Reed was freaking awesome again. I mean, he is incredible. His continued consistent performance has been really, really fun to watch. And is to me, the maybe brightest point of this season so far. Daniel Whalen continued his incredible performance and just kicked the freaking snot out of the ball the entire day. And literally basically led to a touchdown based on him just nuking a punt. Xavier McKinney, his fourth interception in four games. I thought Josh Jacobs, it sounded like he maybe had some issues in pass pro, which is why he wasn't in there as much on some of the passing plays. But outside of that, I thought every time the ball was in his hands, felt like something good was happening. So not all bad for Green Bay. There were some positives in this one as well.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you don't come back, you know, score 22 unanswered without some good plays, right? Like that's just, you know, it wasn't a 40-0 blowout. I do think that this team cleans up a handful of things and they're gonna be freaking awesome. It just didn't click today.
Of course, injuries, a big thing to keep an eye on as well. Christian Watson sounds like it's an ankle injury. Doesn't sound like it's anything too serious. At least that's what Christian told Matt LaFleur after the game, but we'll keep an eye on that. And that could potentially keep him out for a little bit. We'll just have to kind of monitor it. Jair and Valentine did not play in this one. Jordan Morgan did not play in this one. So those would be injuries worth keeping an eye on. And then as we talked about earlier, Devontae Wyatt in a walking boot and with crutches, which is never what you want to see. And hopefully it's nothing too serious and hopefully he can be back, but he was ruled out for the game, did not come back. And obviously again, nothing that you want to see in the locker room after. Hopefully there was nothing else that we don't know about, but either way could be a costly game if Wyatt and Watson eventually do miss time coming up. Of course, they've got the Rams coming up next week. I'll end with this final thought here. Packers through four games, lost against the Eagles, win against the Colts, win against the Titans, lost today against the Minnesota Vikings. Perry, where are you at through 4 weeks with your Green Bay Packers?
I don't know yet because incomplete. We haven't seen them play like a real full game. I mean, Jordan's been hurt. Their two wins have been with their backup quarterback. We just have a very strange sample size so far. So I have a very hard time judging this team. Now, I still feel optimistic and I still feel like they're a winning football team and I don't have any concerns, but I'm not out here like, yeah, we're going to the Super Bowl or they suck. I'm so worried. Like I'm very neutral. I want to see them beat a good football team, a difficult opponent with Jordan at the helm. I want to see them play a complete complimentary game and I'll feel good. I know that they can do it. Go to the Rams, beat the snot out of them. I'll feel great. But through 4 weeks, it's just been a very strange sample size because they're 2-2 and their two wins are with Malik and their two losses are with Jordan against, you know, two good NFC opponents. It's just weird.
Grant?
I wouldn't pick them or put money on them going to Super Bowl right now, but I can talk myself into this very weird first month, making for very compelling video and audio on an eventual championship DVD. They're not on DVDs anymore, but you know, like the special that comes out, it's like back in week four, there's always the ups and the downs. So I'm just saying we have the downs. We just need ups now. Where am I at through four games? If you would have told me before week one, there'll be 2-2 through four games, I'd say that's concerning. That's not good enough. Right. Sure. The Eagles may be great. You drop a game there, but I expect you to take care of, you know, two of those next three at home, like 2-2. Just I wouldn't have said, oh, fine. Slow starter. Like 2-2 would have concerned me. The fact that two of those games were without their starting quarterback. If you'd have told me before the season, hey, Jordan Love's going to miss two of the first four games, but you're going to come out after week four, 2-2. I'd say, great. I'd take that. I'd sign up for that in a heartbeat. And after watching today's game now, I have good reason to believe that this offense is maybe ready to and really kind of move into a cleaner, more productive era of the season. That's not a guarantee. I just feel I can talk myself into that today after the last couple quarters that we watched, especially how the Rams looked against the Bears, which was really, really uninspiring. So I have a lot of optimism moving forward, and 2-2 with a couple games of Malik Willis, I would have taken that before the season, 100%.
I'm a little bit with Perry on this one. I think it's an incomplete. I think it's weird circumstances. You've got Brazilian ice rink game. You've got two wins with a backup quarterback. And then you've got Jordan not looking quite like Jordan and a bit of a vomit first half that leaves you down 28-0 before you start fighting back. Nothing I'm concerned about. This is a really good football team that's going to play really good football down the road. They usually bounce back from this. I think they will this week against the Rams. I think they'll be 3-2. And then I think we'll see kind of they have the Cardinals coming up not too long. The Texans don't look quite as daunting. Jacksonville's not a good team. Like, they've got winnable games coming up. And I think they just have to cut down on their own mistakes. And I think sometimes for a team that, again, has these aspirations and is young, sometimes you almost try to play too fast and too perfect. And it doesn't need to be that. You just got to make the plays when they're there for you. There have been a lot of plays that have been there for this team. Don't try to do too much. Don't try to go full Superman. Just do your 111th and make the plays that are there. And I think in this one, if you make a 37-yard kick, if you catch an interception that's thrown right to you, if you know you go and make a couple of these passes that could have been completable passes, if you just do a few of the things again on the margins, I'm not even talking about like, yeah, you know what? Minnesota got some touchdowns. Tip your cap to them on some of those. You just do some of the simple stuff in this game, not even the heavy lifting stuff. And again, it probably looks like an entirely different outcome and you have an entirely different feel from this one. So they'll slow down. They'll get their feet underneath them. I have no concern. I think it's an incomplete through four games. I think we'll learn a lot more in these next four games as hopefully Jordan eases into this season a little bit more and we start seeing what this team actually looks like. All right, friends. Awesome stuff as always. I think this is going to go down as one of our longest episodes on Pack-A-Day YouTube history, but we had a lot to talk about. There's a lot of really interesting stuff in this game. Perry, of course, packs what she said, but where can we find all of your amazing work and tell us anything you want to plug?
Just follow me on Twitter at Perry_Goldstein and follow the podcast at PWSS Podcast.
Grant?
Wisco Sports Show on the radio every weeknight. Just follow my Twitter. I stream the show and you can find more information there. And I don't mind doing a long pod because this game felt like it was five quarters long. Like, I looked up at the clock at one point, like, how are there 10 minutes left? So I think definitely worth it. And thank you for the time and the plug, Andy and Barry.
And I appreciate you, Grant, for bringing up DVDs. I'm supposed to be the resident old person, but hey, anything that you guys want to do to take some of that heat off of me, always appreciate it. So keep talking DVDs. We can talk cassette players next. It's going to be great. You can find me, of course, at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast for Perry, Grant, and I. Thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, and as always, go Pack-Go.
Go Pack-Go.